This is From the Bookshelves of Forbes India. I'm Divya Shekhar. On today's episode, we discuss a topic that's at the center of our life, our health, and our well-being. How safe are the medicines we consume? As we speak, India's Central Drug Standard Control Organization is investigating four cough and cold syrups made by Haryana-based Maiden Pharmaceuticals, which allegedly caused the death of 66 children in the African nation of Gambia. These syrups contain diethylene glycol and ethylene glycol, which can be fatal for humans who consume it. As our guests on the podcast today, Dinesh Thakur and Prashant Reddy, mention in their book, The Truth Pill, in the past, India has had a depressing record of at least five major events of poisoning by diethylene glycol. The earliest being in 1972 in Madras, which killed 15 children after they consumed a cough syrup called Pimple C that had been adulterated with DEG. The other events of DEG poisoning took place in Mumbai, Bihar, Gurugram and Jammu, in that order. Dinesh Thakur is a trained chemical engineer and public health activist whose efforts to expose large-scale data fraud at pharma giant Ranbaxy led to the company pleading guilty before an American court in 2013 and paying a penalty of $500 million. Prashant Reddy is a lawyer and academician who has been advising Thakur in his advocacy campaign for reform of drug regulatory law in India. Let's speak with them about why, despite such tragedies, DEG adulterations continue to reoccur with such frequency, the problem of drug regulation in India, a country that is called the developing world's pharmacy, and what this means for the $42 billion pharmaceutical market in India, which according to the Economic Survey 2021 is expected to reach $120 to $130 billion by 2030. Thank you for joining us, Dinesh and Prashant. Welcome to the podcast.
Hi, Dipya.
As we speak today, you have received a notice from the drug regulator threatening legal action against your comments on their role and accountability for the death of 66 children in Gambia, allegedly due to the India-made cough syrup by Maiden Pharmaceuticals. Earlier, the government had stated that these medicines do not have licenses to be sold in India, but had clearances for export. What does all this mean?
So basically, the notice was sent to us in response to an interview we had given to a national news magazine, where we had basically said that the particular manufacturing facility which these four cough syrups were manufactured at, the facility itself shows up on a list put out by the CDSCO as one of the facilities certified by it for what is known as a certificate of pharmaceutical product. So although we don't have specific information whether those four cough syrups specifically were certified, from that list, we know that the CDSCO had some role in inspecting that particular facility, which is why we said that the culpability of the CDSCO and the higher-up officials in the Ministry of Health cannot be avoided in this particular case, you know, involving the 66 children in Gambia, because the CDSCO has happily thrown the state drug controller under the bus and has placed all the blame on them. But given that this facility features on a list put out by the CDSCO where it's conducted inspections, that clearly is that the CDSCO is not being completely honest about its role. And because the CDSCO functions under the Ministry of Health, the buck ultimately stops with the leadership of the Ministry of Health.
In your book, you call India's drug regulatory law convoluted, wherein the central government is responsible for imports and approving new drugs based on safety and efficacy data, but licensing of manufacturing units and prosecutions of companies is primarily the responsibility of state governments. Even during the COVID-19 pandemic, we have often seen the government say that health is a state subject. So what kind of challenges does this kind of regulatory framework lead to?
So yeah, let's just look at this situation during pandemic, right? There was I don't know if it was reported in the news. I don't know if you've read it, but in the state of Bihar, if you remember during the pandemic, there was this one drug called Remdesivir, a Gilead drug that was essentially, you know, shown some efficacy in the clinic, although it was still questionable, but people were giving it left, right, and center. And one of the injectables formulated by a company in Gujarat was found to be laced with bacterial endotoxin that killed people in Bihar. When that was reported in the news, one would have expected that any remaining batches of that particular injectable throughout the country would have been recalled, because clearly the medicine was laced with bacterial endotoxin, but that never happened. And that is a good example of the systemic malaise that we have within the country. That's a consequence of the fact that we have different state regulators, one for each state and union territory, and we have the central drug regulator. The fact that, you know, we don't have legally binding recall law, and the fact that the manufacturing licensing for, you know, these companies is primarily the remit of state drug regulators. Between these two sort of parallel systems, there are lots and lots of cracks. For example, the regulator in Bihar, despite finding out that people died as a consequence of being injected by this remdesivir injection, could do nothing to try and effect a nationwide recall. That person, the drug regulator in Bihar has no control over the manufacturing facility or the manufacturer located in Gujarat, for example. The best that they can do is maybe write a letter to inform the drug regulator in Gujarat that, look, your company made this product that made people sick, you know, do something about it. And if you take a step back and look at just the worst case scenario, Himachal Pradesh, which is the manufacturing hub for pharmaceuticals for our country, their drug regulator basically routinely discards any of these notices that it receives from any other states. Not only does it not have a well-equipped lab to analyze the products that its manufacturing facilities makes, it doesn't actually hold any of these people responsible, despite being notified that they continue to make substandard drugs. So to answer the question you're asking, you know, the nature of regulation and regulators in India just enables wrongdoers to flourish without being held accountable. And we see this time and time again.
Why does it happen that such irregularities are brought to light mostly by international bodies, be it WHO, the US FDA, or the French and European regulators?
Those incidents, you know, come to our attention because they're reported in the international media.
Yeah.
As our book actually goes into quite a bit of detail,
yeah.
In the last decade, just three states in the union, among, you know, all the union states of India, between states and union territories, the states of Gujarat, Karnataka, and Maharashtra, just these three states have reported over 7,500 not of standard quality drugs. And this is government's own data. Now, each of these sample potentially represents hundreds of thousands of medicine, you know, pills out there, or syrups out there, or injectables out there. This is one sample from the batch identified and analyzed by the state drug laboratories. Over 7,500. I mean, if you include the Tamil Nadu numbers and the one survey that the national government did, the CDSCO did, if you include that, that's over 12,000 in the last decade. Now, when was the last time that you've heard about 12,000 samples failing in the country? It's just not the US FDA and the European Union that, you know, points these things out to us. It's the fact that we just don't report. It does not register. I mean, the reason we wrote the book was because we wanted to collect this data and put it in front of people of India so that you understand that this happens here. Now, we just don't report. We just don't know. I mean, imagine if you saw 12,000 recalls of medicine in the last 10 years reported in the newspapers, because recall, an essential aspect of recall is public communication, to tell people that there is a bad quality drug out there. If you have it in your house, or if you use part of it and that other part is still remaining, for you to return it back. Imagine if you have 12,000 recall notices in the country in the last decade. What would your response be?
My next question about your book is in two parts. The first is about the influence of the pharma companies or the pharma lobby that you talk about in the book. How can that be minimized? And second, this is about data. At Ranbaxy in 2013, you helped expose how data was being falsified and fabricated. Do you find such instances in India even today, 9 years down the line?
So there are two different questions. You know, maybe I'll take one and Prashant will answer the second one. The first question is the issue of regulatory capture, the influence in the pharma lobby on the lawmaking process. The second one is of transparency, which Prashant will answer. In our book, what we do is we go through in great detail how, despite, you know, sort of, you know, the government's own advisory bodies telling the government to make regulations, to make the drug regulation more responsive to the people of India, time and time again, the influence of the industry undercuts that. For example, we recount how for 46 years, the drug regulatory body has been discussing the need for a law governing the recall. And every time, every decade, you know, this comes up for discussion, is consistently undercut. We see the same thing for good distribution practices because we do not have a law governing transit of medicines once it leaves the manufacturing facility to the retailer. We just don't have one. And every time, you know, this comes up, it's undercut by, you know, the interests of the industry. So we, in our book, we go through multiple instances and document with government's own records how, you know, the industry's influence plays into regulatory capture. Now, to the question of transparency, Prashant will answer.
Whether, you know, data fabrication, et cetera, is taking place, it's very difficult to say from the government of India's or, you know, own inspection reports or from the reports of state drug controllers, because they mostly don't make their reports publicly available. Having said that, there are a lot of foreign regulators who have been inspecting clinical research organizations. And over the last 5-6 years, we've seen several cases where they continue to find data to be fabricated at the clinical research organizations generating regulatory data for pharmaceutical companies. So then what happens is that these foreign regulators then cancel drug approvals where they had approved the drug based on data from one of these tainted clinical research organizations. The larger problem, I think, for India is, you know, the small and medium pharma industry, which forget fabricating data. Many times they don't even have quality assurance, an independent quality assurance department within their, you know, company. Because Schedule M, which lays down the good manufacturing practices in India, requires every pharmaceutical company to have an independent quality assurance, quality control department. And that person in that position should have an independent function so that there's no conflict of interest with the guy running the manufacturing line. And we have seen some inspection reports from Karnataka where the inspection report notes that this company did not have a quality assurance department. Hence, we have ordered them to stop producing drugs. So our problems, to a large extent, are far more basic than the problems faced by, you know, the Indian pharma industry from foreign regulators. So because the companies catering to, say, Europe or American markets will have a quality assurance department, which will then end up fabricating data sometimes. But with the small and medium industry, which is what the company which is involved in the Gambian tragedy is, it's a small and medium enterprise. A lot of these small and medium enterprises just not have even the basic quality assurance departments. So we're dealing with far more basic problems here.
Unless the regulation or regulatory structures change, can we even expect changes in the quality of Indian medicine?
Let me answer that, and I'm sure Prashant will have his point of view. But the role of the regulator, the reason the regulator exists is to ensure that the quality of our drug supply is good, right? Otherwise, why would the taxpayer money go into funding this big bureaucracy? So unless the regulator changes, you know, there is no hope for our medicine's quality to get any better. Prashant?
Yeah, I mean, obviously the regulator does have to do a better job. But even if the regulator is not doing a good job and there's no hope from it, one way the government could try to still improve the situation is just by increasing transparency. So, for example, you know, make available inspection reports, make available drug testing reports. Like there are 27 or 28 government labs in the country which routinely conduct drug testing. So make available information and then let big procurement agencies within the government and the private sector at least look at the track records of companies before they buy drugs. That may help correct some of the situation, because if the data is publicly available, the worst actors in the system will never be selected by, any of the big procurement agencies for tenders. And hopefully they'll just die a natural death. They'll be starved out financially. But yes, ideally, we would want the regulator to be upgraded and to do a better job.
Coming back to the question of data, There is a serious lack of data regarding how these drugs affect our health when consumed, particularly over a period of time. And it's also difficult to pinpoint the role that they have played in adverse events. How can we collect and make available more data?
So the CDSU is supposed to be running something called the Pharmacovigilance Program, wherein they're supposed to record from doctors any adverse events regarding how drugs are, anytime a drug is consumed and a patient says that it's not working or an adverse event is reported, there's supposed to be a system to collect data, which is then published for everyone to look at. In India, that system is very, very rudimentary. When you ask the CDSCO, they'll claim they have the best pharmacovigilance program in the world. But you just have to go to the website and see. You have to download one form, an adverse event form, fill it in, then scan it, email it to some address. There are simpler ways to do it with digital records.
In the book, you mention how the United States has never experienced another mass DEG poisoning event after 1937, when the deaths of patients provoked an overhaul of the Federal Food, Drug and Cosmetics Act with an increased focus on safety. How can we strengthen drug regulations in India in order to focus more on safety?
Well, earlier this year, the government actually had put out an amendment to the Drugs and Cosmetics Act. They had proposed a series of amendments that they wanted to make, and they had kindly sort of given people like us an opportunity to comment. And we, both Prashant and I, sent a fairly detailed, lengthy response to the amendment, what they were proposing, but a larger issue of the Drugs and Cosmetics Act. The question you're asking me to answer, this is not possible to answer in a minute or two. There are so many things about this regulation that are fundamentally wrong. This is something that was enacted before we became independent. Every time we've had a problem, we put a little Band-Aid on it. And after 75 years, it's just become very unwieldy. We really need to look at a bottom-up, revision of this regulation to bring it in line with what, we need as a country in this day and age. And so that submission to the government is available publicly. I'm sure anybody who wants it, is interested in, can go read it. We are very prescriptive in the way that we go about making recommendations, both the structure, the ability of the compliance related to the regulation, and how it actually ought to be implemented.
If I can add to that, in the US, one of the interesting things is that when people die, laws change. There is an outrage. In India, for some reason, that doesn't seem to be the case. 2 years ago, when these 11 kids died in Jammu because of DEG poisoning, forget outrage, there wasn't even basic reportage in most of the country. Only the North Indian newspapers, I think Tribune and Indian Express, covered it in some detail. So there's something fundamentally flawed in our democracy, because we don't seem to be concerned about people dying unless it's an international incident, in which case we look at it as a reputational issue rather than a public health issue. And the other problem is the US, they had a culture of like muckraking journalism, where journalists would really go after the pharma industry, dig up stuff, and there was a market for such journalism. And it would have an impact eventually on how, reform was conducted. In India, health journalism is just not given enough importance by most newsrooms. And you can just see, take any newspaper, it would be rare to see the same health journalist there for more than a couple of years. So unless, there is more public conversation about this, nothing is going to change. And that's where I think even newsrooms have to take a far more interest in this, because, Dinesh and me shouting about this at the top of our lungs by itself is not going to change things. There needs to be a public conversation on it. And unfortunately, that's in the hands of news editors who don't seem to be very bothered about the problem.
Yeah, I completely concur with what Prashant said.
I completely agree that the media has a strong role to play in creating public conversations around this. But beyond the role of the media, how can we create or foster a culture of accountability among those in power?
Well, the first thing is to educate people, right? I mean, I think when it comes to health, we only think about it when we need it, only when we're sick. When we're healthy, we don't really think about our healthcare and how it actually is administered, right? So the purpose of Prashant's and mine writing this book was to try and have a conversation about it. My experience with the Ranbaxy case broke was that it was essentially written off saying it's a documentation problem. We really don't have a problem. It's all a foreign hand trying to make the industry look bad here in India. So unless we have the data to actually bolster and substantiate our, you know, what we were saying, this could have been just essentially sort of, you know, we just calling names. So now that we've, you know, put this book out there, we're hoping that people read it, understand, you know, how the system works, and hopefully begin a conversation. And that's the only way this, you know, this is going to change, because unless people demand better accountability from their elected officials, how is this going to work?
When we say that there is an expectation of greater political will among our elected representatives, how can we get there?
No, I think it just now, you know, this is a very morbid statement to make. But are deaths of children in South Delhi, God forbid, I can guarantee you the reaction of the ruling class. And I include, you know, journalists, etc., living in Delhi, will be very, very different than 66 dead children in Africa, or even, you know, 11 dead children from poor families in Jammu.
You know, I really hope that it doesn't go there for the regulator to take strong action.
Yeah, you know, if I can add one more statement, after this Gambian tragedy, where 66 kids have died, we have not seen a single senior official from the drug regulatory framework or the Ministry of Health speak on record. I'm willing to bet that if the 66 kids who died were in Europe or America, the reaction would have been very different in India.
In the interest of time, Dinesh and Prashant, are there any final thoughts about the book that you'd like to share with us?
The whole point of writing this book was to try and at least start a conversation. So, you know, as many conversations as we can have, to engage people at large to think about this problem, right? That affects you when you most need it, when you're sick. You don't worry about medicines when you're healthy, right? You need medicines when you're sick. And that's the worst time to think about this, because, you know, you're not in a position to actually bargain or create any change at that point in time. So I'm just hoping that, you know, through conversations like these, you know, we are able to sort of start a much larger conversation among ourselves in the country that leads essentially to demanding better governance. Because at the end of the day, look, you know, you, me, everybody pays, you know, as a share of our taxes, both direct and indirect, to support this bureaucracy. And the bureaucracy is not responsive toward us, the citizens. Then what is the point?
Yeah, that's really true. And that brings us to the end of the episode. Thank you so much for joining us, Dinesh and Prashant.
All right.
Thank you. Bye. Thank you so much. Bye, Prashant. Thank you.
Thank you.
And to all our listeners, thank you for tuning in. We'd love to hear from you, so do let us know what you think. This is Divya Shekhar. See you next time.